them on an alternate roundabout route back to the docking bay. This time, Chang had a pair of combots covering the rear to avoid nasty surprises. The convoluted route had me concerned about the additional time it took. Skippy assured me the path the raiding party was taking had the enemy confused and guessing where to go. Skippy still was mostly blind in there. This was the most dangerous point of the mission. Before, the enemy had to guess the raiding party's objectives. Now, the enemy knew where the raiding party was going. Back to the docking bay. The party was two-thirds of the way back, by Skippy's reckoning, when trouble struck. This time the enemy appeared not in armor, but with combots of their own. They blew a wall open and leapt into the corridor. The Kristang combots were heavy and clunky and slow compared to our Theranan models. They made good targets. They were also controlled by much more experienced operators, and they had every advantage. Except one. As the firefight raged and the raiding party was pinned down momentarily, Skippy shouted excitedly that the clumsy movements of our combots was actually helping us. The Kristang had trained to fight the super-fast movements of Theranan-controlled combots and the slow, awkward actions of our combots threw the Kristang's aim off. We lost three combots in the initial firefight. Another was damaged and unable to use its primary weapon. Chang saw Darzi was hampered by carrying Giraud. He ordered Darzi to set Giraud down in the arms of the damaged combat. Private Marsden came forward to help Darzi get Giraud strapped in. They were almost done when Marsden took a hit to the head that shattered his faceplate, then a second round almost separated the helmet from his neck. He went down in a spray of flash-frozen blood, and on my display his life signs went flatline. I notified Chang not to waste time assisting Marsden. He didn't bother to acknowledge. I heard and saw him urging people forward. There may have been other paths to the docking bay, and we have lost people moving forward into the firefight. Chang knew we'd likely lose even more people if they got pinned down and remained on the asteroid for a second longer than necessary. Speed and maneuver were all important. Chang saw that, even through the painful fog of broken ribs. The guy was an Iron Man, even without his powered armor suit. Behind a wall of firepower, the raiding party moved forward, combots clearing the path. Once past that large group of Kristang combots, they hit scattered resistance from Kristang combots and armored suits. I was getting worried. We'd started with six people in suits and nine combats. By the time they'd fought their way back to the docking bay, there were two people dead, one injured and unconscious, and only three combots still functional. The three combots remained to guard the inner doorway while Chang got Sergeant Thompson and Darzi aboard one dropship and carried Giraud aboard the other. Skippy had already partly retracted the outer door, and as soon as Thompson and Darzi were strapped in, he put the pedal to the metal and surged that dropship out and away. I saw on the display he had the dropship pushing 6 G's, and I ordered him to throttle down slightly once the dropship was 10 miles away. Chang's dropship had a slight delay while he got Giraud strapped in, and that delay almost killed us. Thompson had the node, and Darzi had the module. Technically, we'd accomplished the mission already, except for the people in the second dropship. And that's when a stray round came through the inner doorway, missed our combots, flew across the docking bay, and hit the armored hull of the Theranan dropship. The explosive tip erupted inward, creating a superheated jet of plasma that burned through the armor to the interior of the dropship. Once the plasma hit air, it exploded in all directions. U.S. Air Force Staff Sergeant Joy Chung, who was operating one of the three remaining combots, was killed instantly, and three others were seriously injured. Chang and Giraud were protected by their armored suits. Everyone else was hit pretty badly. With people screaming in pain, blood flying around the dropship, and air racing out the hole in the hull, Chang didn't hesitate. He ordered Skippy to get them the hell out of there. The dropship shot out of the docking bay and clear of the doors as Skippy took over the automated repairs systems to plug the finger-sized hole and get the air pumped back up. "Clear. Both dropships clear," Skippy reported in a matter-of-fact voice. "No pursuit. Packages secure. I'm guiding the dropships back here." "Great," I said, emotionally exhausted. "Pilot, I'll be on our docking bay."
"No, sir," Desai said flatly. "Colonel Chang and Major Sims can handle people who need help. We need you here."
She was right, and I knew it. I could be emotional later. Later, after we jumped away safely. "Captain Desai, you're right." I looked down at my shaking hands in disgust. I hadn't been in danger at any time.
It was a long 8 minutes to wait for the dropships to return.
"Dropship secured. Pilot, initiate jump option Alpha," Skippy announced.
"Belay that," I ordered, and Desai turned to me in confusion.
"Jump option Charlie, now. Go."
Desai pressed the correct button, and the ship performed a micro-jump, so we now were in clear space, not shielded by an asteroid. Skippy had programmed 5 jump options into the jump navigation system, and I'd memorized them. They were also listed on the command chair display and on my iPad. Option Alpha was for a jump close to the flower so we could recover that ship. The plan was to jump close to the flower, send a signal for that ship to perform a short-range jump, match the jump with the Dutchman, take the flower onto a docking platform, and then jump to the outer edge of the star system. Option Charlie was a micro-jump away from the asteroid we were hiding behind, in case our position had been discovered. But we needed to remain in the area to recover dropships.
"Can I ask why we're not going after the flower?" Skippy asked.
"We will. Signal the flower to jump to the rendezvous point." Even with the signal crawling along at the speed of light, it would reach our pirated Kristang frigate in a few minutes, and that apparently derelict ship would suddenly come to life and power up engines for a short-range jump.
"Done," Skippy reported. "Colonel Joe, why are we still here?"
"You have control of the nuke near their main docking bay?"
"Yes, of course, I told you that."
The Kristang had rigged the research section of the asteroid research base to self-destruct with a nuke. If anyone invaded the base and the Kristang lost control, they could blow up the base with a single explosion. The nuke was there, so enemies would decide raiding the research base wasn't worth the cost. It certainly would have deterred us, except that Skippy took control of it shortly before we launched the dropships.
"How big is it?"
"I assume you mean explosive yield.
That weapon is roughly 8 megatons. A typical W-76 warhead and your American Trident submarine-launched missiles is 100 kilotons by comparison."
"Light it up."
"What?"
Skippy, Desai, and Walorski said the same thing at the same time.
"Skippy, do not argue with me. I know you wiped their computer memory, but we left behind DNA in there. Human blood. It could tell the Kristang that humans were involved in the raid. I can't risk that. Light it up, right now."
To his credit, Skippy knew when not to argue.
"Weapon enabled on the big red button."
I pressed the button. The asteroid flared in intense light. Desai jumped us away before the debris hit us.
Chapter 16. Home.
The flight recorder video of the asteroid being nuked was popular with the crew. The surviving crew. It wasn't my idea for people to watch the video. I hadn't even mentioned it. Desai or Walorski must have said something, or someone asked Skippy what happened and he volunteered to show them. Watching the utter destruction of the asteroid research base was cathartic for the crew, as it had been for me. Army doctors tell us that talking about traumatic events helps with the symptoms of PTSD. Keeping things bottled up inside yourself or trying not to remember what happened to you makes it worse. Skippy told me the survivors asked him if there was a video of the raid, from cameras on the combots and Kristang suits. There was video, and I told him to release it to anyone who wanted to watch. Jerome and I would watch all the video and sensor feed data to learn lessons on what we did right and what we did wrong. Jerome subtly chided me for being unprofessional. Blowing up the entire asteroid had not been necessary to the mission. I'd done it because I was angry, because I wanted the lizards to feel the pain we felt at losing so many people, so many humans. Maybe I'd done it out of frustration and guilt that I'd not gone on the raid. Whatever. Psychology isn't my area of expertise. The raid was both a success and a failure. In terms of lives lost, it was a failure. I'd now lost over half our original crew, and some of the wounded were going to take months to recover, even with incredible Theranan medical technology. In terms of Skippy finding a way to locate the collective, it was a failure. The thing we'd brought back was exactly what Skippy had asked for. It wasn't damaged, it wasn't inert. Skippy was able to power it up and read data from it. The thing simply didn't tell him anything useful. He didn't know whether the fault was with the device or within himself. He had a bad feeling that somehow he was blocked from memories that would allow him to access data about the Elders, about himself, and about where he came from, who he was. He didn't tell anyone else about his doubts and fears, only me. For my part, I kept his secret and worried on my own that someday Skippy would lock up or blue screen or go dormant or whatever happened with ancient AIs. Skippy had better not lock up on us before we got back to the wormhole near Earth, because in one way, our mission was a success. Maybe in the only way that mattered, our mission was a huge success. Success enough that even only one person survived to fly the ship. The raid was worth the terrible cost. We had stolen an intact Elder Wormhole controller module. Skippy verified it was fully functional, able to live up to its name and control a wormhole, including, most importantly, shutting down a wormhole. We humans had no idea how the damn thing worked. We had to rely on Skippy for that. The point was, because of the raid, we had the ability to shut down that wormhole. We had the ability to deny the Kristang access to Earth. The billions of humans there would consider any price our pirate crew paid to be worth the cost. Relying on Skippy was a problem. He was frustrated and expected us to continue the mission with the remaining crew. That was a conversation I didn't want to have with the crew listening. I pushed Skippy off until Major Sims could take the captain's chair. Chang and Giroux were both in the sick bay. After taking the flower back aboard, we jumped three times until Skippy was satisfied we were safely out of the Kristang sensor network's range. The jump engines were almost exhausted, incapable of more than an emergency micro-jump. We were hanging in deep interstellar space, waiting for the jump engines to fully recharge. "You comfy now, Joe?" Skippy began as tactfully as he always was. "We need to talk about our next move. There are two more possibilities that I can see for contacting the Collective. One is only 3,000 light-years away. Unfortunately, getting there requires a roundabout wormhole route, and it's the less likely of the two options. Also, that one is on a Theranan planet. It's going to be tricky getting in and out. The second one is 9,000 light-years away, out of Theranan territory, and that's both good and bad. And the species that holds that territory are the... Damn it, my boots weren't even untied yet. It was best for me to just say what was on my mind. Skippy, before we continue searching for the Collective, we're going to Earth to resupply. We don't have enough people to keep going with the mission right now. You're a genius. Do the math. There was an ever-so-slight hesitation. That wouldn't have been noticeable if I didn't know Skippy so well. Did he actually run the math? Of course he did. A billion permutations. Maybe a zillion. You're in a bitchy mood, Joe. I'm tired. A lot of people died today, Skippy. I kicked my boots off. Would have kicked them across the compartment if the bulkhead wasn't only 2 feet away. Sentient beings. Don't give me any shit about how we're just monkeys and bacteria. We're sentient. We matter. More than you know, Joe. As you requested, I ran the math. Problem is, I'm not a military strategist, and there are a lot of variables I can't quantify. You promised me we would find the Collective together. Skippy, I lay back on the mattress as best I could. I keep my promises. Explain how we have a reasonable chance for success with the crew we have now, and I'll listen. I don't see it. We have 9 people right now who are combat ready. 2 pilots, and I need to stay aboard the Dutchman. That leaves 6 people for action, and 2 of them specialize in logistics, not infantry. That asteroid was the softest target of our options, right? Most likely, yes. The Kristang didn't realize what they had. That's why the items we needed were so lightly guarded. Lightly guarded? Comparatively speaking. That was your definition of lightly guarded. You had total control of their sensors and most of their weapons. We still ran into a firefight. Even our super high-tech combots got slaughtered. Will either of the 2 other targets be easier to crack? Admittedly, no. You're concerned that you can't trust us. That once we get to Earth, we'll never leave. That will be the end of the mission. You think you can't trust us? Put that aside for a minute. Forget about what I said. Your goal is to contact the Collective. Use your godlike processing power. What are the odds you can achieve your goal with the resources we have? Another ever-so-short hesitation. Maybe longer this time. Damn it. You're right. I was, perhaps, overconfident before the raid. Now that I have more extensive data, my analysis is revised. Our current chance of mission success is less than 50%. To be accurate, it is 12%. That is an unacceptable level of risk. I was so relieved I let my head slump back and banged the back of my skull on the edge of a cabinet. Crap! Crap like you can't believe my numbers, or crap like you believe my numbers and they're worse than you thought? Crap like I banged my head on this stupid cabinet again. Oh. Darn it. No matter how I calibrate my program for reading your voice patterns and expressions, I still get it wrong. You biologicals are maddening sometimes. Yeah, like when biologicals develop technology and build smart-ass artificial intelligences. I told you I wasn't built by... Oh, forget it. Out of long habit, I pulled the laces of my boots open and set them facing away from me next to the door. In an emergency, I could jam my feet in and lace them up real quick. No wasted time. Army training again. We agree, then. We're going back to Earth, right? There were humans and human supplies on Paradise, and Paradise was closer. There was also likely a substantial contingent of Ruha ships in orbit, Ruha soldiers on the ground, and a Jarratha battle group lurking at the edges of the system. Paradise was not a place I wanted to go back to. We agree. Darn it. I've been waiting a million years to contact the Collective. A short delay isn't a big deal, I guess. His voice sounded anything but convinced of that. Ugh. This means we're going to visit that monkey-infested mud ball you call home. Home sweet home, Skippy. Let's get this out of the way so we're not arguing about it later. How can we make it so you can trust that we won't stay once we get to Earth? By we, I don't mean me. I'm keeping my promise to you. It wasn't an academic question. I was worried about it myself. Having a Theranan star carrier and a Kristang frigate in orbit was going to be very tempting to governments on Earth, tempting them to keep us there. And they would make very valid arguments for keeping our two warships in orbit, to examine their technology, to protect Earth in case any Kristang straggler ships were hanging around, and because sending our ships back out to roam the galaxy until Skippy found a collective that may or may not exist was pure idiocy. It wasn't that I wanted to go back out wandering the stars with Skippy. I very much did not. What I wanted was for life to go back to normal, for me to take off the silly silver eagles, to go back to being a grunt, to finish my term of enlistment, go home, and live a normal human life. And little girls want Santa to bring them a pony for Christmas. We both needed to accept reality. There was no normal life anymore for humanity, certainly not for me. If Skippy or I couldn't think of a way to force Earth governments to authorize sending the Flying Dutchman back out, there wasn't a snowball's chance in hell that I could keep my promise. Oh, that. No problemo, Joe. After we go through the last wormhole that leads to Earth, I'll temporarily disrupt its connection to the network. That will disable the wormhole until it resets, which will take long enough for us to get to Earth, load up on volunteers and supplies, and get back to the wormhole. Huh. That's a great idea, Skippy. Why hadn't I thought of that? Skippy had told me he could temporarily disrupt a wormhole on his own. The controller module was needed to shut one down permanently. We'll be on a strict time limit then. Strict, yes. Once I disrupt that wormhole, the Theranan will be very interested to learn what the hell happened. As soon as the wormhole resets, there are going to be ships coming through. Since the Theranan are suspicious, paranoid little green MFers, I can guarantee some of their ships will be visiting Earth, and they won't be there to use their Starbucks gift cards. The Theranan have an established protocol for investigating a new wormhole connection. They send a heavy force of battleships through with cruiser escorts. We do not want to tangle with the Theranan battle wagon. One of those ships could pound the Dutchman into subatomic particles, and even I could only slow them down. Skippy had mentioned several times that, for all its apparent power, a star carrier was not primarily a warship. It was a long-range transport for warships. In a fight, star carriers ran away and let their escorts fight. That is perfect, Skippy. Please plot a new jump course to Earth. We'd be on Earth only long enough for a cup of coffee, or in my preference, a cheeseburger. I could taste that cheeseburger already. The ancient elder AI had surprised me again. I'd been ready for a long and heated argument about whether we continued searching for the Collective or resupply at Earth. Skippy didn't respond to arguments. He did respond to facts and logic. Hey, my finger poised above the button to turn off the light. Out of curiosity, what did you calculate as the odds of the raid we just did succeeding? Originally 37.6%, Then after the crew demonstrated proficiency with combots and Captain Giraud developed his assault plan, I calculated the odds at 51.1%.
Barely 50%?
You didn't think that was worth mentioning?
Above 50%.
Above is above. You didn't ask. And your records indicate math is not your strongest competency.
Arguing about the past wasn't productive.
The jump engines will be fully charged in 2.5 hours, right?
Wake me in 2 hours.
Unbelievable. I'm the most advanced sentience in the galaxy, and you're using me as an alarm clock.
2 hours, Skippy. Good night.
The crew was relieved and thrilled to hear we'd be stopping at Earth before continuing the mission. At least they were happy about it for a couple days. Then on one of my duty shifts, Sims waved to get my attention. I nodded and gestured for her to come onto the bridge. There wasn't anything important going on at the time. We were a light year away from a very unimportant red dwarf star, 3 light years from the nearest wormhole, waiting while the jump engines recharged.
"Colonel," Major Sims said, "now that we're on our way to shut down the wormhole, there's some second-guessing among the crew."
"What?" Desai exclaimed from the pilot seat, and Walorski also turned in his seat. I had the same reaction.
"Major, the whole point of this mission is to cut off the lizard's access to Earth."
"Yes, sir. That's not the problem. People are concerned that the expeditionary force on Paradise will be cut off from ever returning to Earth. They won't receive shipments of food or medical supplies after the wormhole is shut down. We'll be abandoning them. Permanently."
Her hands balled up into fists, displaying her anxiety.
"That doesn't set well with the crew. Or with me. Sir."
This was a conversation I knew was coming and wasn't looking forward to. It had been hanging in the back of my mind ever since Skippy first mentioned the idea of shutting down the wormhole. Before I could fashion a reply, Skippy spoke up.
"Not to worry, Major Tammy. Your expeditionary force has been abandoned already, and there's nothing we can do about it, so we're not responsible. I have intercepted messages that the Theranin have told the White Wind Clan they won't support further attempts to recapture Paradise. The planet isn't worth the effort, and the Theranin forces are being kept busy elsewhere in the sector. The Kristang stopped bringing supplies from Earth even before the Ruhar retook the planet. The Kristang won't make any effort to evacuate humans from Paradise, and the Ruhar don't have access to Earth or the transport capacity in this sector. They're on their own."
He pissed me off again.
"Damn it, Skippy. You don't have to sound so cheery about it."
"Facts aren't cheery or gloomy, Colonel Joe."
Skippy had a defensive tone in his voice which surprised me. "They're just facts. The fact is, whether we shut down the wormhole or not, UNEF is stuck on Paradise for the foreseeable future. The Ruhar are providing food supplements until your crops can be harvested, I think."
"Skippy, you are not helping."
"Major, I have not been ignoring UNEF. I haven't wanted to talk about it because Skippy is 1,000% right on this. We can't do anything to help UNEF. We can help the billions of humans on Earth. And if anyone has the bright idea that we should trade Skippy to the Ruhar in exchange for the hamsters transporting UNEF back to Earth, forget about it."
Skippy was cheery to hear that.
"Thank you, Joe. I appreciate..."
"Skippy's programming will make him go inert in the presence of interstellar-capable species, so if we give him to the hamsters, we lose the capability to shut down wormholes or anything else."
"Oh." Skippy genuinely sounded surprised. "That hurt, Colonel Joe. For a moment there, I thought you were expressing some tiny bit of loyalty to me."
I sighed before I could stop myself.
"Skippy, you've made it clear, every time you can, that you're a powerful super being and we're bacteria to you. This isn't a friendship between you and me. This is an alliance between species or cultures or whatever it is. We're useful to you and you're useful to us. When I make a deal with you, I am absolutely going to uphold my end of the bargain. I don't know if you consider any deal made with bacteria to be worth keeping on your part."
"Huh?"
"Yeah, huh."
I caught a warning look from Sims out of the corner of my eye. She probably was concerned about me risking Skippy getting pissed off. And she didn't know that little shithead like I did.
"Fair enough, Colonel Joe. You don't know this, since you are, after all, bacteria. But I am actually 100% reliable when I make a promise.
We can work on that."
He still sounded hurt.
I wondered what portion of his capacity was devoted to an emotion-emulating subroutine. It was almost convincing.
"Are we done, Major?" I asked Sims. "There isn't anything we can do to help the expeditionary force on Paradise. UNEF came out here to protect Earth. That mission got all screwed up because the lizards lied to us. But we can protect Earth. That is our mission. If there is ever a way to re-establish contact with UNEF, I'm all for that. But it's beyond our capability."
Sims nodded with a grimace.
"You want me to talk to the crew?"
That would be taking the coward's way out.
"No, I'll handle it."
I was more tactful when I spoke to the crew later that day. Explained the situation, listened sympathetically, said that I also had friends on Paradise. What I did not do was pull rank and state that I'm the commander and we're doing what I think is best. Mostly I listened and let people talk. Everyone understood there wasn't anything practical we could do for the humans on Paradise, and what was really bothering people was guilt. Guilt that we would hopefully be going home to whatever earthly comforts were still there. Home to friends and family and cheeseburgers. While UNEF would be left to hope the Ruha decided to divert enough resources from their war effort to keep them alive. Even if the Ruha felt like feeding their former enemies, the technologically backward humans, the Kristang could harass Ruha shipping enough to disrupt supplies getting to Paradise, and the Ruha might not be able to provide for UNEF. In the end, I reminded our not-so-merry band of pirates that we would be coming home to an unknown situation. That we didn't know how many Kristang and ships were on the Earth side of the wormhole. That Earth might no longer be the blue and green haven we remembered. That we might have to fight our way through numerically superior enemy forces, and that, when the Kristang on the Earth end of the wormhole realized they had no way home because we'd shut down the wormhole, they may be tempted to forget about the rules and use banned weapons against the human population. Eyes narrowed and jaws set when people considered that. Our mission isn't over when we shut down the wormhole behind us. That's when it begins.
Colonel, Private Putri asked, the American Putri, not the Indian one. What's the plan if there is a substantial force of Kristang ships at Earth?
Then we fight. It's no good shutting down the wormhole if the lizards at Earth can destroy our home. We fight however we can until the lizards are no longer a threat to Earth. The Dutchman isn't a battleship, but we do have weapons and superior jumping ability. If the lizards want to fight, we pound the shit out of them. We fight until the lizards are destroyed or until our last breath. That's my plan.
A couple hours later, I was taking my shoes off in my tiny sleeping quarters when Skippy spoke through the speaker in the ceiling.
Colonel Joe, we need to talk.
Oh, I groaned. Don't we talk enough? Can this wait?
Emphatically no. We are close to transiting the wormhole to Earth. I need you to understand something before I program the jump drive.
Uh-oh. His tone touched off my spidey senses. This was going to be trouble. What hadn't the shiny little shithead told me this time? Swinging my legs back onto the floor, I rubbed my face to spark semi-alertness.
You have my attention. What is it?
It was a rousing speech you gave about fighting the Kristang with everything you have, to your last breath.
You're keeping me awake to compliment me on my speech?
No, truthfully. As a speech, it was third-rate at best. Totally derivative.
You're talking about the potential of going into humanity's first space battle, and the best you can do is lame cliches. You could at least have thrown in some warmed-over quotes from Patton or something.
For Christ's sake, my point is, you may intend to fight with everything you have, but one thing you won't have to fight with is this ship. I need the Dutchman to contact the Collective. I won't allow it to be put at risk. And since I need a human, a live human crew, to fly it for me, I won't allow you to send everyone away to fight, especially if it is likely that you would lose.
Shit. I gritted my teeth to answer.
What do you mean you won't allow?
If you want to do something stupid that will put the Dutchman at risk or deprive me of a crew, I won't cooperate in running the ship. That means I won't program jumps or load courses into the autopilot or prepare and target weapons. Captain Desai has only learned to minimally maneuver this ship in normal space, and I can lock out those controls too. By going through the wormhole and then shutting it down behind us, I'm taking a risk that you might decide not to help me find the Collective after we resupply at Earth.
We have a bargain, Joe. I expect you to keep it.
Fuck.
Such a multi-purpose word, Joe.
I meant it as fuck, yes. I remember our bargain. I will absolutely keep my end of it.
You have any genius thoughts on how we're to resupply if the Kristang have a major task force of ships in Earth orbit?
That scenario is unlikely, given the price the Theranin have been charging the White Wind Clan for shipping to and from Earth. I expect the Kristang have garrisoned only a minimal force on Earth. Their technological advantage is so overwhelming they would not need many troops to hold your backwards planet. Theranin communications that I have intercepted indicate they have major fleet elements setting up for a battle around a wormhole cluster at the outer edge of this sector. Their attention is focused elsewhere.
The point is, Skippy, we have no idea what we'll find when we get to Earth. If we discover the lizards are terrorizing our home planet, you can't expect this crew to run away and wander the galaxy with you. We need another option.
I'm open to suggestions, Joe. You're the soldier.
How was I supposed to come up with a space battle strategy with a tired brain and no experience or training in space combat, or ship-to-ship combat of any type? Oh, yeah. Because I wore silver eagles, that's why.
All right. How about the flower? You don't need that ship, right? Are you okay with me sending part of the crew away on the flower to fight the Kristang?
I promise you, Skippy, I promise you I won't leave you here. I will remain aboard the Dutchman.
The flower is somewhat useful, as having a Kristang ship attached, particularly a battle-damaged Kristang ship, is an effective ruse. But it is not essential.
Okay, you can detach the flower. I'll even program a jump for you. I don't know what good you expect your untrained crew to do with a ship they don't know how to fly.
Then I need to get them started on training pronto. We needed a strategy also.
Or not.
I considered what Giroux said about flexible battle plans, and it made total sense. We couldn't make plans until we had intel, any intel.
How about this, Skippy? Can we jump the Dutchman in close enough to see what forces the Kristang have around Earth, but far enough away to be safe? Then we can either detach the flower, or, if you agree the risk is minimal, we jump the Dutchman into orbit.
Sounds suspiciously weasel-wordish. Minimal risk is not the same as no risk.
Oh, what the hell, why not? I'm bored already. Just for you, Joe, I'll agree to this. We can jump directly into orbit and scope out the situation from there, and we jump right out again if I judge the risk to be too great. Not that I don't trust you or your crew, but I will program the autopilot on a timer to jump us right back out unless I cancel the command.
Deal. I hastily agreed before Skippy could change his mind. Any risk too great for Skippy would mean it's best for us to retreat and consider our options anyway. Maybe we could lob a couple railgun rounds at the Kristang just before we left as a wake-up call. Having a Theranin star carrier jump into Earth orbit and blast a couple Kristang ships without warning would certainly throw the Kristang into panicked confusion.
For your education in tactics of space combat, if the Kristang are at Earth in force, it's better to jump right into orbit than to jump in a couple AUs out. Even I can't conceal the gamma-ray burst when we emerge from a jump. We'd have to wait there and run long-range sensor scans, and the Kristang at Earth would be alerted to our arrival. Jumping right into their laps will allow us to catch them off guard, and maybe pump a couple missiles up their asses before they can react. Then we can jump away if we need to.
Space combat sounds complicated.
I thought back to when I'd listened to the chicken pilot talk about air combat after our first war game on Camp Alpha.
Uh-huh.
Then there's the Skippy factor.
Part of me wanted to avoid taking the bait.
The Skippy factor?
You know, my incredible awesomeness.
Oh, sure.
Not convinced. Specifically, I am referring to my ability to remotely take control of Kristang systems using the Theranin nanovirus embedded in their systems. To do that, I need to be within about a light second of the enemy ship.
A light second? That's, light travels, I was trying to picture myself in a classroom.
Let me put you out of your misery before you sprain your brain, monkey boy. A light second is roughly the distance from the Earth to your moon.
Oh, I thought a moment. I thought ships shouldn't jump in that close to a planet.
Most ships can't. The gravity well of a planet distorts the jump field at entry to make jump navigation unpredictable,
and the field distortion can damage jump engines, even tear a ship apart. A ship with me controlling the jump engines compensates for the field distortion, thus the skippy factor.
Impressive, I had to admit.
What? No snarky joke?
No.
Well, you may be an arrogant asshole, but your awesomeness is legit.
It ain't bragging if it's true.
Yeah, I heard that before.
Hey, is that why you jumped us in so close to that gas giant planet?
There was an ever-so-short hesitation.
Well, that may have been too close. I hadn't finished tuning up this ship's crappy jump engines.
Won't happen again.
Hey, good talk. You need to get some shut-eye.
We can talk more later, huh?
I laid back down on the bed, trying to conceal a smile. The monkey had made the AI uncomfortable. I needed to remember that.
The transition through the final wormhole was uneventful. Any fears I had about us running into an outboard Theranin ship were for nothing. Skippy couldn't detect any ships in the area. With the wormhole safely behind us, Skippy disrupted the wormhole's connection to the network, and it blinked out. Helpfully, Skippy had loaded a new app on my Z-phone, on the home screen of all our Z-phones. It was a simple clock. A clock counting down until the wormhole reset. We all got the message loud and clear.
In my quarters, I was attempting to attach sergeant stripes to one of my uniform tops. Skippy had fabricated the chevrons for me. Once we reached Earth, my theater rank of colonel would be voided, and I'd revert back to my regular army rank of sergeant. Part of me, a big part of me, feared what the army brass would think about me ever wearing silver eagles and all the things I'd completely screwed up or the questionable decisions I'd made. As soon as Earth was on the display, those silver war eagles were going into a box, and I wasn't going to make a big deal about it. Chang, who had been released from sickbay now that his broken ribs had healed enough, agreed he would take command when we reached Earth, with the exception that I was still captain of the ship. In my opinion, Chang wasn't comfortable dealing with Skippy yet. It didn't matter much anyway. Once we made contact with the authorities on Earth, command authority of our pirate crew would be from the surface, assuming we didn't have to fight our way through a fleet of Kristang warships. I was nervous about that. There was another thing I was nervous about. I waited until I could talk to Skippy in private. Taking a break from running sprints down the Dutchman's spine was a good place.
Listen, oh great and powerful Oz, I'm really sorry that I ever called you Skippy. I feel like an idiot now. I didn't know how powerful you are, and I meant no disrespect. And the government is going to shit if they hear I named you Skippy, so what else should I call you? Lord God Almighty is still out, in case you were thinking of that.
I'm good with Skippy. I like it.
You sure? I couldn't tell if he was joking.
Yes. Skippy is a nickname, right?
I think so. I didn't know of anyone whose given name was Skippy.
And nicknames can be either a term of derision, which, face it, isn't possible with you lower life forms talking about me.
Oh, of course not. I rolled my eyes.
I saw that. Or a nickname can be an indication of acceptance, of belonging, of being one of the cool kids.
Cool kids? A million-year-old, unbelievably powerful being wanted to be one of the cool kids?
Sure, let's go with that. People calling me Skippy will constantly remind you monkeys that I am not anything like any Skippy who ever lived on your miserable dirt ball of a planet, and that will point out your total unimportance compared to me. Far better than any name intended for respect.
And really, do you really think you knuckle-draggers are actually capable of giving me the respect I deserve?
The name Skippy is appropriate. It was a defensive reaction by you to something far beyond your understanding. It was an offensive reaction to the fact that you're an asshole. Or that. Whatever. Before we made the final jump into our home solar system, I ordered a stand down to make sure everyone was well rested and all our systems and gear were ship-shape and ready to rock and roll. Especially I was concerned about the Dutchman's weapons, comparatively weak though they were. Chang was up and about faster than I expected, even with Theranin miracle treatments. The guy had broken ribs and a partially punctured lung. He came into the CIC while I was in the big chair, and Sims was in the CIC.
"Colonel Chang, should you be out of sick bay?" I asked.
Skippy hadn't said anything about him releasing Chang from treatment.
Chang lifted his shirt.
There was a hard black plastic something wrapped around his ribs. I am being treated. Skippy said walking around would help the tissues to adjust as they healed.
All right. As long as you don't think you're going back on duty. You take it easy for a couple days, agreed?
Chang winced, still in pain, when he moved.
Agreed, Colonel. I hear it was your idea to use our suit radios to triangulate the position of the communications node.
That was excellent thinking. It may have saved us all. If we had to sort through all that trash by ourselves, we would have been trapped.
Getting admiration from Chang felt great. It was also misplaced. Unfortunately, I needed to explain what really happened.
Well, thank you. It wasn't anything brilliant. It was obvious. All I did was ask whether the comm node could transmit. It seemed like it should if its purpose is, you know, communications.
Skippy is incredibly smart. He's also absent-minded and doesn't think of things that we should consider obvious. Like how he didn't tell us about the comm bots until I asked him how the Theranan fought. Always keep that in mind when you're dealing with Skippy. He simply doesn't think on our level.
We jumped into Earth orbit. Skippy reported there were only two Kristang ships there, a frigate, and a troop transport that was also their command ship. I adjusted the display to zoom in close on the big Kristang troop ship, so it filled one of the view screens. It was a damned big ship, although I kept forgetting how very much larger the Dutchman was. The Dutchman could carry dozens of those Kristang ships across light years.
I'll need to establish a connection to the nanovirus on the Kristang command ship, crack their multi-level encryption, take control of their computers, and lock them out.
How long will that take?
I did it between me saying establish and connection.
Nobody likes a show-off, Skippy.
I can go slower, if you like, but I'd probably get bored and lose track of what I was supposed to be doing after a couple picoseconds.
We can't have that. What assets do they have on and around Earth?
Just those two ships, the troop carrier over there that is their command ship, and a frigate in a polar orbit, currently over Sumatra on the other side of the planet. The troop carrier has 24 assault dropships of various types, of which three are aboard now. One is in orbit on approach, and the others are scattered across the planet. The frigate also has two small dropships aboard. There are Theranan defensive installations atop the space elevators, and the Kristang have a constellation of 17 Mazer satellites in orbit for ground strikes.
Okay. I let out a long breath. We're safe enough to stay here? Cancel the jump out?
Affirmative. I have canceled the jump away countdown.
We got lucky. Both ships are within my range of control, although the frigate's orbit will move it beyond my range in 10 minutes.
At the moment, the Kristang are startled by a Theranan ship, a star carrier, appearing in the sky without notice. I'm confusing them with garbled communications from the Dutchman. That won't stall them for long. Both Kristang ships are preparing to jump away on short notice. They don't realize that I control their computers.
He said there are satellites. Like what kind of satellite?
Each satellite is 58 meters long, powered by a fusion reactor which can generate 820 megawatts of Mazer power.
Is that a lot?
Your American nuclear aircraft carriers typically generate around 200 megawatts from fission reactors.
Holy shit.
I thought satellites would be wimpy things. My idea of a satellite was a box with solar panels that allowed me to watch football games.
Oh, very naughty.
Two of the satellites are preparing to fire on a city called Mumbai. There was a large protest there against the Kristang.
Colonel, I could tell from the tone of voice that Skippy was being serious for a moment.
Those satellites and the frigate have been busy suppressing attempted rebellions all over the planet. Human casualties are estimated in the millions. The frigate has caused extensive damage to major cities with railgun strikes.
I pounded my fist down on the big red button in anger, not thinking what I was doing.
How many Kristang are down there?
1,423 Kristang, mostly in 7 compounds. 12 of their dropships are currently in the air.
I leaned forward tensely, looking at the display, not realizing my right fist was resting on the big red button.
We need to keep that troop ship, but that damn frigate, I'd like to jump into the sun. Can you retarget those satellites to hit the Kristang compounds and their dropships?
There were bright flares across the planet, and I could see the troop ship shudder as it looked like lizards' bodies were blown out airlocks.
The troops' ship also blossomed a salvo of missiles which curved down toward the planet and slammed forward, rapidly becoming burning streaks through the atmosphere.
Done, Skippy announced. Kristang population is now 721.
Ah, missiles impacting and...
Okay, population is 172.
Wait. Ha! Got those buggers.
There was another bright flare from a satellite.
Satellite went over the horizon. I had to detract the maser beam. 164.
What?
You told the system to fire.
I didn't.
Right then I realized my hand was resting on the button.
Shit.
Skippy, I asked if you could do it. I didn't tell you to actually do it.
Oops.
Oops. Skippy, that is one big fucking oops.
You didn't want me to jump that frigate into the core of the local star, either, because I can't undo that one.
In a couple million years, the atoms of that frigate will emerge up into the photosphere, but that Humpty Dumpty can't be put together again.
We need to work on our communication.
Noted.
I shifted my attention back to the troop carrier.
What happened over there?
That ship was absolutely infested with lizards.
Ugh, disgusting.
I had to fumigate it with explosive decompression. There are four still alive over there. Stubborn, damned things.
Skippy sounded frustrated.
He could probably kill those four lizards, but that could require him to damage the ship that I wanted to keep intact.
I involuntarily shuddered, thinking of Skippy's immense power, and how badly things could go wrong if I failed to pay attention again.
I needed to put a cover on that big red button, so I would have to flip up the cover the next time I wanted to use it.
You have complete control? The lizards can't hurt any humans right now?
Right now, I imagine they are too busy pissing in their pants to think about doing anything else.
I also took the liberty of shutting down the Kristang projects to modify your best agricultural land for their use. And I fried all their computer systems. Whatever they're going to do, they'll be doing it without much electronics.
Great. Thank you. I rubbed my face and closed my eyes for a moment. Over 2,000 lizards snuffed out in a moment with their own weapons.
When I looked up, Sims's eyes were as big as saucers.
Did that really happen?
Sims asked, astonished. I nodded and pointed to the view of the troop ship, now surrounded by a cloud of flash-frozen lizard bodies, and over 1,000 Kristang dead on the planet. And for some reason up here, it felt more natural to say the planet than Earth. It had been a while since I'd seen the place, anyway.
People nodded at me through the glass.
That's a good start, Major Sims observed.
I agreed. Perhaps decent, ordinary people would be horrified by such death and destruction. Speaking for our merry band of pirates, we had no sympathy for the lizards. If what we'd heard about the situation on Earth, what the lizards had been doing to people and the biosphere was true, then the lizards' whole species could go screw itself.
Skippy, can you contact the United States government? I need to talk to someone in authority.
Certainly. One moment.
Go ahead.
Hello?
A female voice I vaguely recognized came out of the speakers.
Who is this?
She sounded surprised.
Who is this?
You called me. Where did you get this number?
The voice demanded.
And I remembered with shock where I'd heard that voice before. I'd never heard that voice so haggard, so worn down with despair.
Skippy, I said in a harsh whisper, what the hell did you do?
He wanted to talk to the American government, so I dialed your president's personal encrypted cell phone.
I shook my fist at his shiny cylinder.
We seriously needed to work on our communication.
Ma'am, Madam President, this is Sergeant Joe Bishop, U.S. Army. Formerly with the 10th Infantry Division. We've captured a Kristang troop ship and a frigate and a Theranin star carrier. We're now in orbit, and we just killed all but 164,
plus the four on the troop ship, Skippy chided.
All but 168 Kristang on or around Earth, and we have control of their remaining ship and their satellites.
There was a long pause, with voices talking in the background.
Quiet!
Mr. Bishop, is it?
My military aide is telling me there were satellite strikes around the planet, but all against Kristang installations. I thought the Theranin were patrons of the Kristang. Kindly tell me what is going on.
She sounded shaken. I let out a long breath. It is a very long story, ma'am. The important facts are that the Kristang no longer have control of Earth, and there won't be any Kristang reinforcements coming, because we shut down the local wormhole.
Hey, don't forget about me, Skippy spoke up. I'm the hero of this story. You're only the plucky sidekick who provides comic relief.
Who is that speaking? The president asked. Oh, what the hell. I was tired.
Ma'am, that is a chrome-plated beer can named Skippy.
I paused to consider that was certainly the first time anyone had ever said that to an American president.
He's a several million years old artificial intelligence who makes the Theranin look like not-so-clever pond slime by comparison.
Skippy made a raspberry noise.
Please, they're not even that smart.
It was the president's turn to let out a long breath into the phone.
I'm getting a headache again.
Like I said, ma'am, it's a long story. We need to talk.
Also, we need pizza, Skippy added. Not for me, but our merry band of pirates here needs pizza and cold brewskis. Party on, dudes.
Merry band of pirates? The president asked. I was getting a headache, too. After the president handed me off to an aide to discuss details, and we agreed on terms for bringing our pirate crew home, I checked the main display again.
Skippy, are we safe? Are there any Kristang or Theranin ships heading our way?
I still couldn't interpret the displays. The displays looked empty, except for the Kristang troop ship and the Dutchman. And the moon, I guessed, was the big blob on the display.
Not according to the databanks on their command ship over there. The next Theranin carrier was scheduled to come through the wormhole in 10 days. That won't happen now. But it's possible there are ships out there that the command didn't think the Kristang here needed to know about.
Colonel Chang, Major Sims, I saluted both.
Now that we were home, my theater rank was annulled, and I had reverted back to my regular army rank of sergeant. They both knew that. For me, I couldn't decide whether to be disappointed or relieved.
Someone needs to go down to Earth and brief our leadership.
Skippy, can you fly a dropship remotely? We'll need to bring people down to Beijing, Delhi, London, and D.C., and none of us know how to fly a Kristang or Theranin shuttle. Our dodo is busted.
And Paris, Giraud reminded me.
And Paris. I'd forgotten about Giraud, our only French pirate. And we need to be extra careful with the wounded. Everyone who had been wounded in capturing the flower and raiding the asteroid base were now out of sickbay and on their feet, some of them with Theranin portable medical devices still attached. Walorski's forearm was due to be released from the healing sleeve in a week. Chang's ribs were technically healed. Skippy said the bones had knitted together, although Chang told me it still hurt like hell when he took a deep breath. To me, it was a miracle of Theranin medical technology, or a miracle from Skippy, that everyone who had been injured would be making a full recovery.
I can fly multiple dropships remotely, Skippy responded as if it were the easiest thing in the universe. No need for people to fly all over the planet in one ship. But after the ships land and people get out, I'm locking the doors. Can't have you monkeys, you know, monkeying with them.
Understood. Other than me, is there anyone else we should leave aboard? I looked around at our soon-to-disperse merry band of pirates.
Why are you remaining on board? Chan asked before Skippy could.
Sir, if a Kristang ship jumps into orbit, Skippy and I need to be here to defend Earth. I pointed to the big red button.
No, we don't. I want to see Earth, and not only from orbit, Skippy insisted. I can control this ship from anywhere down there.
Sims spoke up. The fire control button is here on this ship, sir. It took me a moment to realize she had addressed the sir to Skippy rather than me.
Oh, screw it, Skippy scoffed. Colonel Joe, I just loaded a big red button app on your Z-phone. Press that anywhere on Earth and we're weapons free.
I pulled my phone out of my pocket. I'm a sergeant again now, not a colonel, and I don't see it.
Skippy sighed. Is it called a smartphone because it's smarter than the user? It's on the last screen of apps between your two versions of Solitaire and that birds game you never play anymore.
I've been kinda busy. I saw the app titled Big Red Button. It was hard to miss.
Shouldn't this app be on the first screen?
Joe. We don't want you butt-dialing the weapons and accidentally destroying, oh, say, Canada.
Shit. I held the Z-phone away from me.
That could happen?
Unlikely, since I programmed the weapons.
You only pressed the button to authorize their use.
However, we've had communications problems, as you say, so...
Sergeant Bishop, I would feel more comfortable if you and, Sims struggled to think of a way to avoid saying Skippy's name. Mr. Skippy came with me to brief our leadership, including the president, who you already know, apparently.
She didn't look happy about that. Chang leaned toward Sims.
I do not agree that the device, he pointed at Skippy, should be the de facto property of America. As the ranking UNEF officer...
You're not my ranking officer, Changy boy. Colonel Joe is still the captain of this pirate crew,
Skippy said with a distinctly unfriendly tone.
And calling me the device is not the way to get on my good side.
Now before you say something else stupid, I'm not the property of anyone, and I'll probably be asked to visit China while I'm here, so your scientists will have plenty of opportunity to ask me the same dumbass questions the Americans are going to ask me. Now, apologize to me and Colonel Joe, or your dropship may end up in the Gobi Desert by mistake.
No apology needed, sir, I hastened to say. Chang was, after all, a real lieutenant colonel and a good guy.
Damn. Closing the wormhole and beating the Kristang may have been the easy part.
Chang bowed slightly.
I do apologize, Mr. Skippy. No offense was intended. My intention was to ensure the rights of China are properly considered.
Skippy sighed again. This was getting to be a habit.
Believe me, I have no interest in helping one group of monkeys down there gain advantage over the others.
You can whack each other with sticks all you want when I'm not around.
If you have more brains than an amoeba, you may want to focus your energy on repairing the damage the Kristang did to your planet. I'm just saying.
Sir, Sergeant Adams addressed a question to Chang. Can we contact our families?
Skippy spoke privately into my earpiece.
Colonel Joe, your family is safe and sound, but that's not true of the families and friends of the entire crew. I'd be careful about comms for now. I just told the same thing to Chang, except I also told him that his father's brother was killed by the Kristang.
Through the glass, I saw Chang touch his earpiece, nod, frown, then look at me. He addressed the whole crew.
We don't know the situation down there yet. And now that we're back, we fall under the authority of our home governments. They will likely want to maintain operational security for the immediate future. I'm sure we will all be briefed after we land.
My brief fantasy of dramatically landing a Theranin dropship on the White House lawn were quickly dashed, as the White House, and much of D.C., had been damaged in Kristang anti-traitor actions. The U.S. federal government headquarters was now located in Colorado Springs on the site of what used to be the Air Force Academy, behind heavy fortifications. Skippy was all for blowing over the academy at hypersonic speed, utilizing the full stealth capabilities of a Theranin dropship, then curving around and landing wherever the hell he felt like to let the American government know right from the start how powerless they were. I pointed out that I was enlisted in the U.S. Army and had taken an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, and therefore the legally elected government of the nation technically had authority over me. So the request by the President that we follow the U.S. Air Force's designated flight path was in effect an order I was bound to obey. That was a long and convoluted conversation, which revealed more about Skippy than it did about me or the United States. Skippy begrudgingly programmed the autopilot for a totally unnecessarily shallow entry profile, dropping into the atmosphere over the Marshall Islands of the Pacific and accepting an escort by a pair of F-22 Raptors over the California coast. Skippy was right. Even though the Raptors were pushing their limits in supersonic cruise, it felt like we were barely crawling through the sky. I did get a good view of Yosemite National Park, though, so the extra flight time wasn't totally wasted. On the ground, we were met by Secret Service agents brandishing automatic weapons, who ordered us to proceed down the ramp slowly, one by one. That got Major Sims annoyed. She told the agents to lower their weapons before the super AI who had wiped out the Kristang in less than 10 seconds grew angry. When they hesitated, Sims asked if they really thought 9mm ammo was a threat to Skippy. Man, she was pissed. The rifle barrels were held at half-staff after that. I came down the ramp after the officers and Staff Sergeant Adams, having reverted to my regular Army rank of sergeant. Rather than stuffing Skippy into a rucksack,
I held him in my left hand in front of me, in what I intended as a position of honor. It was damned heavy. I wondered if he were adjusting his mask to screw with me. The Secret Service, due to their protective detail training, were not about to let a potentially dangerous object near the President until Skippy cut through the bullshit and called the President directly on her encrypted